to be loved by people and the leader specifically. Right. One was that actually he had a purity of intention in all these fronts that he had been.
That's right.
That is, he was doing his works, all the jobs and the assignments that have been given to him through a purity of intention. And he did not look at the ranks, let's say political and social ranks that or positions that he could have. It is quite clear for the people, specifically Iranian, that he had the chance even to be the president of the country sometime. Okay. And there were some rumors that he's going to be nominated for the presidential
election.
But
he never showed love toward
actually,
political actions.
He never loved to be in these positions.
And we can say he did not have the love towards the political actions.
Yes.
There is a different meaning of politics in Islam.
Okay.
The one we have.
No, I mean, I mean political.
Not this material word or the status or the chair or
very usually. True.
But in the presidential sense of the word, or become, for example, he said that I do not belong to any political line.
Mm.
Okay, whether be it right or wrong. He was a revolutionary in the true sense of the word. Okay.
Very true. So he had the chance to be actually to be elected for any of these high-ranking positions in the government or in the country, but he was unwilling to go for these, let's say, jobs and positions. Moreover, he could have, because he was a retired person from IRGC, and he could go for, like any other people, to do his own business and start a business.
That's
and
right.
To be involved in the economy of the country, like any other, let's say, retired people from armed forces.
That's right.
But he, again, did not like that.
He loved to be in the field.
He preferred to be at the
okay.
service of people, not only Iranian, but I can say human beings in general, because he was giving his services to most of the countries around us, to Iraqis, to Afghans, to Syrians, to Lebanese, and I can say to the whole resistance line.
Yes.
So all of them were benefited from the helps of this, let's say, beloved general.
He was for 22 years the commander of the International Quds Force, which is the international, the cancer section of the IRGC. Mm-hmm. And this is very difficult, and some say that the security and the safety of the Iranian borders were upon the, we can say, Quds, which is, of course, considered as a terrorist organization and the blacklist of the U.S. But we all know that what Soleimani was doing in Syria and Iraq was acting against ISIS. And both, they say, we know that in the U.S. magazines, in Newsweek here and there, they call him the shadow general.
Very true.
And the shadow general is the person who is over the present in the field action, I mean physically speaking, but they cannot track him. Neither by ISIS nor by we can say the U.S. And what he did in that region was really great.
Moreover, look, inside the country, he did not actually limit himself to be inside the political parties or groups.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, he was looking at these political parties from above. So this is something that not only the leader, but also ordinary people, commonly people, can actually prefer this kind of behavior, that a person does not actually pay attention to these, let's say, political tendencies, which most of them have no basis, I can say. So the right path, which has been shown by Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, is quite clear for all of us.
That's right.
And I don't know, in these, let's say, conflicts that we periodically see between different parties,
okay.
to what extent can be, I don't know, defendable, it's up to them to defend.
Okay.
And also, this kind of look was not limited also to Iran. Even to the countries that he was giving services, like Iraq, he was looking at the people,
right.
not inside the parties. For example, he was working with different opposing parties and groups in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that he could actually make a good communication and relation with different people. So this is an art. Look, a person like me might be able just to work with some limited group of people.
Mm-hmm.
This is because I don't have the art to be in touch, or let's say have, efficient
but
communication with different people.
I think he was beyond the countries that he has provided services, because, you know, he was a freedom fighter.
Yeah, he was a freedom fighter.
Yeah. He fought for the freedom. Like the Saddam regime has imposed the war. The Americans imposed the war.
Yes.
Now, this is, it looks funny for me.
When the Lebanese 33-day war happened.
Hassan.
That's right.
It looks very funny for me. Like when America says, like, because the Quds force is fighting beyond the border.
Yes.
In order to protect their country, they are the terrorist groups. Whereas the American troops, they can go all around the world and they do not call them as a terrorist.
This is the picture that the media is making, you know. When Trump has killed him, we can say, And it was the violation of international laws. All know, and Trump must wait for the consequences, okay? This was a violation of international laws. When Trump killed him, he has called Soleimani a monster, okay? This was a picture that was made by the media in America and Europe out of Soleimani. But when you go to the these oppressed countries...
Well, he was a monster for the CIA. The American forces and the troops and their allies, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, throughout these 22 years or 40 years of the revolution, he was protecting this country from outside.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And obviously this was a big deal for them.
Yes.
That they cannot obviously tackle one person, which is, that's why they call him the General of Shadow.
Yes, Shadow General.
The Shadow General.
Okay.
So that's why they call him, because they couldn't do anything of him.
That's right. But you know, the thing that they don't understand is that Soleimani was not a James Bond 007, okay? For them, Soleimani was like acting like an intelligence serviceman, okay? Yes. Intelligence man, like, you know, a James Bond thing. No, he was not, okay? The character that was nurtured and educated inside the Islamic Revolution for the family side, the political side, the social side, is very, very much different. And unfortunately, they don't understand this.
And we can see, like, in his personal life, obviously, as you mentioned, he was a good man, a good husband, a good father.
Yes.
A good neighbor, and he was really he was nurtured and mentored by the good teachers like Imam Khomeini, and Rahbar himself, like the supreme leader as well. So we have this phrase in Urdu, basically, you know, because you started the program with the question that why Rahbar or the supreme leader loves him so much. We have this phrase like "jisne usko chutti na mili, jisne sabak yaad kiya,"
which means
"usko chutti na mili." He never have a holiday, a person never have a day off. Jisne sabak yaad, sabak, you know, in Persian we say to the lecture or lesson. Who have learned his lesson properly, he never have a day off in his life.
Yes.
So the students who learn a lot, who learn even on the day when they're off, they have to go to the work. For example, we had this scientist Fakhrizadeh, Shahid
Fakhrizadeh.
Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Obviously, if there was a holiday, for example, the Friday, which is holiday, if there was a work, he was going there.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Those who learn their lessons properly, and Shahid Qasim Soleimani properly learned his lessons. That's why after the 8-year wars, he couldn't sit at home because he have learned the lesson how to defend the Islamic state and what to do and how to be, we can say, like a defender.
That's right.
So that's why every day he was involved in these things.
Thank you very much. I think we are done for today's episode. We'll get to the more characteristics of Shahid Qasim Soleimani in upcoming session of the program Viewpoints. Said Mohsen Naghvi and Ali Alavian, thank you very much for presence in this program.
Thank you, brother.
And dear audience, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Don't forget to visit our website, parstudio.com/Ian Khalaf Islam page, or our YouTube page, Khalaf Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في ثراك للقاك هل أعود أو وراك في سماك من جديد ذات يوم فيه قبري عند قبرك ويشم الناس روحانا بعطرك إن روحي الآن كم تشتاق وصلك قد تأخرت كثيرا توت بعدك من دماك لعلاك شهيد اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في ثراك للقاك هل أعود أو وراك في سماك من جديد يبقى باب أشلاء يزار أو بقايا من وصايا الكثار بالشهادات أنت حققت انتصار وانتظرت أنا لألحق بالمسار انتماك لعلاك يا شهيد اصطفاك واجتباك للخلود في ثراك للقاك هل أعود وراك في سماك من جديد
The Limelight.
Neither U.S. President George W. Bush nor U.K. Prime Minister Tony Blair have had to answer the charge of the illegality of their war against Iraq. Although Iraqi journalist Montazer Azadi did throw his shoes at Bush in Baghdad in 2008. In this article, Vijay Prashad, journalist, explains why a group of international media organizations reject and denounce the U.S. government's attack on Julian Assange and journalism. This article is published under the heading, Throwing a Shoe at the Illegal U.S. War on Iraq. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. On July 12, 2007, two U.S. AH-64 Apache helicopters fired 30mm cannon rounds at a group of Iraqi civilians in Baghdad. These U.S. Army gunners murdered at least a dozen people, including Reuters photographer Namir Nuruddin and his driver Saeed Chamagh. Reuters immediately asked for the U.S. to conduct a probe into the killing. Instead, they were fed the official story by the U.S. government that troops of Bravo Company 2 to 16 Infantry had been attacked by small arms fire as part of their Operation Ilaj in the Al-Amin Al-Thaniya neighborhood. The troops called in airstrikes, which came in and cleared the streets of insurgents. Reuters had information that the helicopters filmed the attack and so the media house requested the video from the U.S. military. The United States refused, claiming that there was no such video. 2 years later, Washington Post reporter David Finkel published The Good Soldiers, a book based on his time embedded in the 2 to 16 battalion. Finkel was with the soldiers in the Al-Amin Al-Thaniya neighborhood when they heard the Apache helicopters in action. He defended the U.S. military, writing that the Apache crew had followed the rules of engagement and that everyone had acted appropriately. The troops, Finkel wrote, were good soldiers and the time had come for dinner. In his recounting, Finkel made it clear that he had watched the video of the incident, even as the U.S. government denied its existence to Reuters and to human rights organizations. On January 5, 2010, Chelsea Manning, a U.S. troop in Iraq, downloaded a tranche of documents and videos pertaining to the war on two compact discs and took them back with her to the United States. On February 21, 2010, Manning passed on the material related to Iraq to the WikiLeaks organization, which had been set up in 2006 by a group of engaged people led by an Australian national by the name of Julian Assange. WikiLeaks and Assange went through the footage and published the full video from the Apache helicopters on their website under the title Collateral Murder on April 5, 2010. The video is horrifying. It shows the appalling inhumanity of the pilots. The people on the ground were not shooting at anyone, but the pilots fire indiscriminately. One of them says, "Look at them. Nice." Another says, after they fire at the civilians. Saleh Muntasser Tuman, a van driver, drives onto the scene, stops and gets out to help the injured, including Saeed Chamagh. The pilots request permission to fire at the van. They are rapidly granted authorization and begin to open fire. Minutes later, Army Specialist Ethan McCord, part of the 2-16 battalion in which Finkel was embedded, surveys the scene from the ground. In 2010, McCord told Wired Kim Zetter what he had witnessed. "I have never seen anybody being shot by a 30mm round before. It didn't seem real, in the sense that it didn't look like human beings. They were destroyed." In the van, McCord and other troops found Sajjad Muntasher, aged 10, and Doha Muntasher, aged 5, badly injured. Their father, Saleh, was dead on the ground. In the video, the pilot saw that there were children in the van. "Well," he said callously, "it's their fault for bringing kids into the battle." When WikiLeaks released the video, then 12-year-old Sajjad Muntasher said, "I want to get our rights from the Americans who harmed us." His mother, Ahlam Abdul Hussein Tuman, said, "I would like the American people and the whole world to understand what happened here in Iraq. We lost our country and our lives were destroyed." They were met with silence. Sajjad, who recovered partly from his injuries, was killed by a car bomb in Baghdad in March of 2021. Robert Gibbs, press secretary for former U.S. President Barack Obama, said in April 2010 that the events depicted in the video were extremely tragic, but the cat was out of the bag. "This video showed the world the actual character of the U.S. war on Iraq, which United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan called illegal. Neither U.S. President George W. Bush nor U.K. Prime Minister Tony Blair have had to answer the charge of the illegality of their war against Iraq, although Iraqi journalist Muntasir al-Zaidi did throw his shoes at Bush in Baghdad in 2008 while saying, "This is a farewell kiss from the Iraqi people, you dog." And filmmaker David Lally Wacklin did interrupt Blair's testimony at the Leveson Inquirer in 2012 to call him a war criminal. When WikiLeaks and Assange released that video, they embarrassed the United States regime. All its claims of humanitarian warfare lost credibility. It is from this point onwards that the U.S. regime, whether under the charge of Obama, Trump, or Biden, sought to punish Assange. Assange had to be brought to the United States and thrown into prison. No one was going to be allowed to get away with revealing the truth of U.S. warmongering. In 2019, the government of Ecuador ejected Assange from his refuge in its London embassy and turned him over to British authorities. A few days later, the British government explained why the WikiLeaks founder was sitting in Belmarsh prison. We can confirm that Julian Assange was arrested in relation to a provisional extradition request from the United States of America. He is accused in the United States of America of computer-related offenses. The U.S. Justice Department said that Assange was wanted for a computer hacking conspiracy, but Assange did not hack into any computer. The material was collected by Chelsea Manning, who passed it on to WikiLeaks, which published it along with a range of media outlets. Assange is a journalist and a publisher, not a hacker. It is journalism that is being punished. That is why 8 media houses from around the world joined together to publish a statement on the recent British court decision that Assange can be extradited to the United States. This statement is here. On December 10th, Human Rights Day, a British court delivered a verdict that clears the way for the extradition of journalist and publisher Julian Assange to the United States. If the extradition goes through, Assange will face criminal prosecution in the U.S., including under the infamous U.S. Espionage Act. And if convicted, he could spend the rest of his life in jail. Julian Assange and his organization WikiLeaks published vital information received from whistleblowers such as Chelsea Manning that chronicled U.S. war crimes and atrocities in Iraq and Afghanistan. This includes collateral murder, the horrifying video that showed U.S. military personnel killing Iraqi civilians, including two journalists. WikiLeaks revelations also exposed corruption and human rights violations by governments across the world, and these reports have been carried and cited by media organizations globally. It is for this crime of journalism that Julian Assange has been persecuted for over a decade. He is the first publisher to be charged under the Espionage Act. The U.S. regime and its allies across the world have refused to accept the fact that Assange is a journalist. The persecution of Julian Assange is thus a fundamental assault on journalism, press freedom, and freedom of expression. The under-designed media organizations reject and denounce this attack on Julian Assange and journalism. Freedom of the press will remain a hollow phrase as long as Julian Assange and WikiLeaks continue to be hounded. In 2004, the Iraqi artist Nuha al-Raidi died from leukemia caused by depleted uranium that the United States used in Iraq. Her captivating book, Baghdad Diaries, A Woman's Chronicle of War and Exile in 2003, tells us about the suffering endured by all living beings in her native Baghdad during the U.S. bombing of Iraq in 1991. The birds have taken the worst beating of all. They have sensitive souls which cannot take all this hideous noise and vibration. All the caged lovebirds have died from the shock of the blast, while birds in the wild fly upside down and do crazy somersaults. Hundreds, if not thousands, have died in the orchard. Lonely survivors fly about in a distracted fashion. On January 28, 2007, a few months before he was killed by the U.S. Army's Apache helicopter, Namir Nuruddin went to a secondary school in the Adil district of Baghdad, where a mortar attack had killed 5 female pupils. Nuruddin took a photograph of a young boy walking past a pool of blood with a football under his arm. Beside the bright red blood lies a few rumpled school books. It was Nuruddin's humane eye that took this powerful picture of what had become normal in Iraq. This is what the U.S. illegal war has done to his country. Assange, who published a story about Nuruddin's death, sits in his cell, waiting to be extradited. After the verdict of the higher court, the journalist John Pilger observed, "Recently, I passed Tony Blair's £8 million mansion in London's Connaught Square. It's an hour's bleak journey to Belmarsh Prison, where Julian Assange lives in a small cell. This is British Christmas 2021. The war criminal rewarded, the truth teller punished, perhaps to death."
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids? That is, from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa Al-Bahadili and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program we discuss problems, issues and other relevant questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are mostly based upon the holy book of the Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and naturally of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and Islamic researcher Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today we will be continuing our discussion on how we can raise our children in an Islamic manner. Said, last we spoke about how it is important that we have our children choose a proper guiding friend, a brother in faith that they may draw advantage of, that they may come to learn and they may come to inspire and influence each other in a positive way. Dear Said, as a parent, how can I perhaps help my children find such a good friend? Should I go look for such a friend, or should I teach them, or what am I supposed to do in this situation?
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan al-la'in al-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajum. When it comes to friends and choosing a friend, first and foremost, as parents, we should ask ourselves, first we should ask ourselves, look at the people around our kids, right? We have to make a judgment ourselves. And so before we go on about teaching our kids, we have to see what kind of kids do we have in the community or in the group that my son will be hanging around. Right. Do we have liars, for example? Do we have cheaters? Do we have naughty boys? Do we have
violent people?
So, right. Violent kids.
Right.
So, we have to look at all these things before me and you go choosing. Because the Ahl Bayt, alayhim as-salam, they have given us certain criteria with people that we should avoid. For example, it says when it comes to al-kadhab, he says, إِيَّاكَ وَالْكَذَّاب, I warn you and the liar, فَإِنَّهُ يُبَعَّدَ لَكَ الْقَرِيبِ. Right? Or يُقَرُّبُ لَكَ الْبَعِيدِ. A liar, when he lies, that which is far, he makes it close.
Right.
That which is close, he makes it far. يُرِيدُ أَن يَنْفَعَكَ فَيُضُرَّكَ. He wants to help you, but he ends up doing what? Harming you.
Right.
So, for example, that's a child I don't want for my kids. Or, for example, when it comes to a person who is corrupted, a person who is dhal, a person... So, this is something that you need to make sure that you study beforehand.
So, that's the responsibility of the parent, the caretaker.
Exactly. So, the caretaker, first and foremost, he has to study, like we said before, we need to study the environment that you are in.
Right, first where you live. Foremost. Right.
Right. And then once you make this
analysis
right. and this dissection of your community, of your society, then you have to bring your child the awareness of friends
right.
and the effects of friends. And why is it important to have friends first? And why is it important to avoid bad friends seconds?
Right. Said, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today, we are discussing how to raise our children Islamically. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left off.
Now, we have a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam where he says, tell me your friend and I tell you who you are.
Right.
So basically, what he's trying to say is that your friend would reflect your akhlaq, or the akhlaq of your friend will reflect on you.
Right.
So he becomes, in a way, a teacher for me and you, if we have friends.
Right.
So with our kids, any child who is considered to be his friend can influence him with super ease, without any problems. If one of them is smoking, my son will surely smoke soon after without a question of a doubt.
He will end up smoking.
Right. Exactly. If any of my son's friends smokes, if one of them smokes, I guarantee you my son will be smoking.
It drops off. It influences.
Right. And it will come naturally.
Right.
Without any hassle, because when we are with our friends, we are very open with them.
Right.
Right. We give them everything. We open up. We know everything about them. They know everything about us. So we do things together, whether it's good or bad. So I have to make sure that from the beginning, I choose the right friend.
Right.
Otherwise, we could end up in a lot of trouble.
Choosing the right friend, the parent or the child, teaching him
now,
how to
the
choose.
Child himself, this is the thing about children.
Right.
If you try to choose for them, it's not going to work out.
Right.
And I'm talking from experience because my dad tried and he failed miserably.
Right.
As children, we are very stubborn.
Of course.
We like to choose our own. Why? Because we'd like to choose kids who have the same mentality as ours. For example, me or those who are like me, we have a certain mindset when it comes to our studies. Like, we're not very smart, we're not very dumb. We're kind of in between.
In the middle.
Now, those who are very smart, we consider them to be nerds, right?
Right.
Now, my dad's job as a father, he wants me to be with the nerds. He wants me to be a nerd. He wants me to be a smart person. Now, saying a nerd is not a bad thing, by the way. It's a good thing, you know?
Right,
so he wants me to be a smart person. When he comes and he tries to pair me with someone from that caliber, from that class, I'm not going to coexist.
You do not click with them.
Yeah, so like, right. You know, they have
some tension.
Yeah, I would like to people on my own statue. Right, right. And my own stature.
It's natural. We seek people who are similar to us.
Similar to us. So that one, there are similarities. We have a saying, this is, الطيور على أشكالها تقع, right?
Right.
Birds will fall in their own groups. So it's simple. It's as simple as that. So forcing a friend into your kids is not good. Now, what you can do is you can introduce a friend to your kids. So, for example, you know, a good kid, you can slowly trying to get him to know each other. Not say, okay, this is your friend, this is the guy I want you to be with. For example, you
not
talk about
directly.
Him. No, so you talk about him, you see him, you make way where they where the two come together, they get to speak.
Play dates, they go meet
exactly,
and play
together.
Exactly,
they have play dates, night dates, I don't know, they have sleepovers.
Whatever
they are. There are places where you can introduction rather than choosing. Choosing is always the wrong thing to do when it comes to kids.
Right.
So then we have to work on trying to educate our children into the dangers that can happen from friends.
Right. Let's discuss that after a quick break.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing how to raise our children in a proper Islamic manner. Say, just before we went on a quick break, we said that we needed to teach our children or introduce to our children a good friend. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
So, trying to gain and introduce a good friend to our kids, it is one of our duties and missions as parents to do.
Right.
And this is something that the Quran warned about. The Quran wanted us to even have good friends. The tradition of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam and the Prophet, they spoke about this many, many times.
Right.
So when it comes to friends, there are dangers need to be looked at, and there are benefits that need to be looked at.
Harmful influences.
Exactly. So there, in the same way there is a harm influence, there is a good influence.
Right.
Now, in a society that is open, now, especially now the whole world is like a village, there are things we can't really control. Okay,
right.
For example, my kid being in school.
Right.
I can't control that. My kid being, for example, in a social platform, it's very hard to control
of
who he meets and who he sees.
Right.
Now, the only way that I can make sure that my child is protected from these things is with a lot of education, with a lot of teaching,
right,
with a lot of bringing his attention and his awareness to these things.
Right.
Unless I do that, then I can feel almost powerless to do anything about it. So he goes to school, he hangs out with his kids. I can't always police him.
Of course,
you can't always be behind saying, no, don't talk to this guy. No, talk to this guy.
No, perhaps
you and me remember, obviously, me and you went to school. We made friends, and we made bad friends, right? And our parents weren't there to control it. And even though our parents didn't like certain kids that we were with, they couldn't do much about it,
right?
And now the situation is even harder when you have, like I said, you have friends who are unseen.
Right?
You don't understand the amount of danger that the unseen friends could bring to the child.
Of course,
So, and sometimes it is, you know, one of the issues that people facing today. Sometimes that person who is a friend of the child is actually not a child, rather a grown up.
Right. Said, actually, on that note, if I may interrupt you, in our societies, it is very normal to see children of both genders playing with each other, a female and a boy, no problem. But when should we start drawing the lines? Like, is there an age limit, or should we prevent them from the start from forming any
bonds, relations with females, or what should we do here Islamically?
Now, Islamically, when it comes to kids, for example, we have instruction that says when it comes to girls, I think by the age they reach 7 or 6, you try to avoid touching them, trying to avoid kissing them, trying to avoid, because they're only a year or 2 years away from being a mukallaf.
Right.
So, and even according to some ulama, it's even a makruh to touch or kiss a girl at the age of 7. You need to, you know, leave them off.
Right.
So, at certain times, yes, they need to be, you know, as, you know, from 1 to maybe 3, 4, maybe it's okay. But after that, when the child starts to develop feelings, right, and emotions, and more importantly, he starts to develop curiosity.
That's the dangerous part.
That's the dangerous part. So right, curiosity means that, why is she different than me? Why am I different than her?
They start exploring.
And then exploration happens, and then, you know, that leads to a very dark path. So right, there has to be a time where both need to be separated.
Right. And with keeping that in mind, we will unfortunately have to end today's program. I thank you for your insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any comments or questions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. In addition to that, we also have social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is hosting, that is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in the Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghpan has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital Kabul to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
That's why we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now we're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmax for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. 5 horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Abora Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues. The school in Spain is offering students an opportunity to join a special orchestra. The project, dubbed The Music of Recycling, brings unwanted junk back to life by transforming them into musical instruments. And here is how they sound. The project offers the instruments to the orchestra in one of Madrid's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. The students say the orchestra keeps them away from mischief and out of serious trouble while giving them an artistic outlet. Several dozens of children are taking music classes for members of the orchestra as part of the project. The ensemble has put on several concerts across Spain, but because of the pandemic, they had to pause their performances. The project is run by a Spanish environmental group and is inspired by a similar orchestra in Paraguay. To most people, an eggshell is something that gets tossed in the garbage, but to one Chinese artist, the delicate eggshell is the chosen canvas to express art and create mini masterpieces. Zhu is a talented craftsman who has created a series of unique egg sculptures with the theme of Beijing's Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games. Icons of ice and snow sports, as well as etchings of the 2022 Olympic mascots, are showcased in this series. The thin and delicate texture of the shells adds to the difficulty of the craft, which creates a sense of fragile beauty. Zhu says his fascination with eggshell art started when he was very young.
The Christmas season is when people around the world left out a dose of joy in the form of Santas. But it's different in central Thailand on this Christmas Eve. Thai children were ecstatic to see Santa Claus's distributing presents, but this time in the shape of elephants. Dressed in Santa costumes, 5 elephants carried dolls, face masks, and sanitizers for students. They were surrounded by many human Santa Clauses as well. But the students cheered with joy while reaching out for presents from the jumbos. Event managers say their goal was to encourage students to stay vigilant during the pandemic, plus they wanted to give the children some fun to look forward after months of virtual classes. The event is a yearly highlight for a school that caters to students from kindergarten to secondary level.
Scientists have made a stunning discovery inside a fossilized dinosaur egg, an embryo that's been preserved in a perfect shape. The embryo was found inside a 66 million year old fossil in a museum in the Chinese city of Guangzhou. Paleontologists say it's the best dinosaur embryo ever found. They're hoping it would help a lot in finding the links between modern birds and dinosaurs. The fossil belongs to a toothless Oviraptorosaur, a group of feathered dinosaurs that used to live in what's now Asia and North America. The embryo is nicknamed Baby Yinliang, after the Chinese museum that houses the fossil.
After almost 2 years of isolation due to the coronavirus pandemic, Mexicans are once again celebrating Christmas together and a fair in the capital, Mexico City. Here's more.
It is a joy that we've been planning for a long time to go out and to take this picture because we've been locked up for 2 years and we couldn't go out. Now there's green light. We decided to go out with the whole family to live these moments together.
A few things are different than the fair as far as Mexican tradition goes. Santa, and not the traditional three wise men, give out presents. Families also have their photos taken by the Father Christmas. These are rare moments amid the coronavirus pandemic. The attendees say the situation is complicated, but they will try their best to make it work. The festival has been made possible by the introduction of green passes, which indicate full vaccination against COVID.
Exchanging gifts is an inseparable and also the most joyful part of Christmas traditions. How about sharing the joy with animals? Now, a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali is doing so by giving presents to its animals. The presents are actually the animals' favorite foods served in a different way. Animals spend time unpacking the gifts decorated in Christmas theme and then access the food they like the most. Fitting in this way arouses the animals' curiosity and fills them with excitement. Zookeepers say they want to show that animals always receive care at their zoo.
It is a very cool way to generate empathy for visitors. Although animals do not know that it's Christmas or that it's a special date, it is important to generate that message in visitors that we make care of our animals and that for us it is important to share with them this Christmas season.
The zookeepers say they make use of enrichment strategies for their initiative. They actually stimulate the behaviors of a range of animals, even the species they keep in an aquarium. Running a marathon is pretty tough for most. But a group of people has upped the ante to take the competition to sub-zero temperatures of Antarctica. 62 people descended on the Union Glacier from around the world and ran over a 42-kilometer course. The area is just a few hundred kilometers from the South Pole. Soft snow and temperatures as low as minus 15 degrees Celsius did not stop Latvia Evia Rain from setting a women's record. The event was delayed for several days because of a massive storm that battered the area a week ago. Adventurers and athletes have been putting their strength to the test in the race every year since 2005.
IRIB English Radio.